jobless health care, telenursing follow-up, hospital-acquired asthma, and vital signs review, part two. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and we're here again for another look at nursing news, commentary, and tips just for nurses and nursing students. I want to remind everyone that The Nursing Show is a proud member of the ProMed Network. You'll find a lot of other great medical programming from medical professionals over at promednetwork.com. If you'd like to follow up on any of the information in this particular episode or any of the other episodes of The Nursing Show, you'll want to make sure you head over and check out The Nursing Show website frequently. NursingShow.com is your resource for the links to everything I talk about in this episode and the others, but it's also a great resource for you to check in daily and follow up on recent articles posted there, as well as links to interesting research and other articles that you'll find listed at the Nursing Show site. While we move on along, I want to remind you that if you have a comment or anything you'd like to add to the discussion that we have this week on the show, you can certainly send that in by email to comments@nursingshow.com. You can also always click on the comments button, link right there at the bottom of every single article on the site, and leave your comments directly below each post. We've been getting a lot of response in from nursing students as the new semester starts to ramp up for much of the nursing school population. So we'll be moving along into a lot of extra tips and things, and we've got some exciting developments on the horizon just for nursing students. So you'll want to make sure you sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter, because that's the best way to hear about what's going on at the Nursing Show. And you'll find a sign up link right there in the upper left-hand corner when you get to the website. It'll just fill in your name and email address and you'll get signed up that way. So that's a great way for those of you that are students that are maybe looking for some additional study resources on top of the Nursing Show. We've got some interesting things that'll be happening in just about a week. So you'll want to stay tuned and definitely get on the newsletter list so that we can let you know what's going on when things are ready to move there. I want to remind all of you, too, that you can check out Paul Bond's great show, Emergency Nursing Today. He covers two shows a month, and each show covers a specific topic area in nursing. And his show is just a fantastic resource for you as well. So if you're looking for those kind of resources while you wait for things to move on here, you can definitely check out Paul Bond's Emergency Nursing Today podcast. Let's jump right on into the news right now, and I'm going to lead off with a story that has to do with the new administration that has stepped into office this past week here in the United States as President Barack Obama begins moving forward with his agenda. One of the items that's pretty high on his list, according to everything I've seen, is healthcare reform. Now, will we get it done this time? Will it actually mean anything? It's too early to tell, but it's definitely something that is greatly affected by the economic downturn. You wouldn't necessarily think so, but every time someone loses their job, they are often also losing their benefits. And those benefits are sometimes linked to family members or the patient themselves with chronic issues that have been treated under their benefits package for years, and suddenly they are left without coverage with expensive treatment programs, medications, and more that they have to now pay for out of pocket, and they don't have any income coming in. So healthcare reform seems to be something that's going to have to be on the market anyway, just simply because all of the economic issues are causing an additional healthcare reform problem. I wrote an article earlier this week looking at this specific topic as we compare the numbers of uninsured individuals and how that's expected to rise over the next 12 to 18 months with the economy. And it's something that we need to be actively involved with. I think that any kind of meaningful healthcare reform has to start with ideas from the people directly involved in healthcare. And that includes patients, that includes doctors, and especially that includes nurses. So I want to remind you that this isn't a vacuum. This isn't happening in just space somewhere. We have to become involved. You have to contact your elected officials and let them know how you feel. And I'm not going to tell you what source of healthcare reform will work for you or what side of that coin you might fall, but you definitely need to have your voice heard, especially since we as nurses cover so many aspects of patient care. It seems to me that we are better suited to represent the whole spectrum of patient health and the health of this nation. So I urge you to check out my article from earlier this week, and of course the link in the show notes to the article from thewashingtonpost.com that looks at some of the issues Congress and the new president are facing regarding healthcare reform. Next up, I found an interesting study that looked at telenursing and the way it improves quality of life for patients that have medical issues that may not need to come in and see a physician or a nurse practitioner, but do need to have someone to answer their health questions. This is a study I picked up from the Journal of Clinical Nursing, their January issue, a study that was conducted over 2 years from researchers from Umeå University in Sweden. They were doing traffic accident follow-ups. So basically what happened was they had traffic accidents that occurred. They divided the groups of people into two different groups, and they were given a survey to fill out both about a month after the accident and then again about 6 months after the accident. One part of that group, one population, the test subjects, were actually also sent a phone call from a nurse to ask if there were any concerns and to offer to answer any questions for them at some point after that initial survey. It's about 6 weeks or so after they had received their initial treatment. So what did he find out? Well, they found out that at the six-month survey date that the people in the telephone group were 35% less likely to complain of pain or discomfort than the patients in the control group. And so you can understand that people who received some kind of telesupport from a nurse had fewer problems with things like anxiety, depression, mobility problems, because of course, if they had them, they got those questions answered and they were pointed towards resources to get some follow-up care in place. This just proves again the efficacy of providing some telenursing resources for patients as an alternative to overcrowding hospitals and exam rooms in doctor's offices for problems that could be handled over the phone. And I think that this is a study that needs more follow-up, as so many of these studies do. But I'd like to see this study conducted here in the United States with a bit larger population. The patient population in this study was 568 people involved in motor vehicle accidents. I'd like to see how this study works out for other types of injuries and illnesses, also with a larger population group, perhaps spanned over many hospitals. So anyway, I would like your input on this. If you're involved in telenursing, how does that work for you? We've talked with people who are involved in telenursing in poison centers, and they certainly get a lot of satisfaction from their patient contact. But I wonder about other areas of patient contact. So get in touch with me here at comments@nursingshow.com, and let me know what you think. Finally, I'm going to wrap up the news today with a story I picked up talking about an increased job risk for nurses and other people working in hospitals from cleaning products and disinfectants. Now, this is probably something, if you think about it, it might occur to you. It's one thing to clean your house on occasion with a disinfectant product in your bathrooms. It's quite another thing to have every room around you cleaned several times a day with some kind of disinfectant product so that there is this constant presence in the air you breathe. And it seems that there may be a risk of increased asthma problems for nurses that are regularly exposed to these products. Now, this is a research article that's come out ahead of time from the Occupational and Environmental Medicine Journal. And the researchers looked at a sample of 3,600 healthcare professionals, including a group of nearly 1,000 nurses in Texas. And this was nurses whose job entailed their regular use of cleaning products, as well as some other allergens and aerosol treatments used in hospitals. And it was found that when they adjusted for other factors, that people were 6% more likely to have been diagnosed with asthma since starting their job than other healthcare colleagues. And this is the individuals that are regularly involved in the cleaning of the rooms. We'll have to follow up on this article and definitely do a little more looking into how we handle cleaning the areas around us and disinfecting. Nosocomial infections are a huge issue in most facilities, so we can't stop cleaning completely, but there's got to be some way we can protect the individuals around those cleaning products from harm. Time now for this week's tip of the week, and we're going to move on into part two of what we started last week, the look at vital signs. Now, last week I talked a little bit about the specific individual vital signs, normal ranges for adults. This week I'm going to be talking a little bit about why we are using vital signs, and for some of you, you're going to be scratching your head going, what's he going into this for? Well, I think it's important for us to remember that vital signs do not live in a vacuum. A single set of vital signs, as I tell students that I instruct on these types of things, a single set of vital signs does not a stable patient make. And it's important for us to keep in mind that it is the overall trending of those vital signs that is going to lead us to look for other solutions for our patients when we're seeing a trend in a direction we're not pleased with. Vital signs include, we did this last week, but we'll cover it again, pulse, respirations, blood pressure, temperature, pain rating, and in some cases, pulse ox. Pulse ox is what I leave for last because it's not used uniformly in every situation. It may only be brought out for respiratory patients, and that would be in lieu of something like arterial blood gases, but it is something to keep in mind. So the big five, I guess, are pulse, respirations, blood pressure, temperature, and pain. Pain is something relatively new to the marketplace, at least for some people. Pain is something we should be checking every time we check the other vital signs. And it is something that should be trended as well because it will give you an idea of the pain management situation for a given patient. If you can look back and see that they are likely to need more pain medication in a given time frame, you may be prepared and want to make a point to stop in and see a patient around a certain time of day to assess their pain. And so these are the kind of things that trending gives you. Trending gives you a way to chart the patient. And in many hospital settings that I've seen, most hospital charts will give you the ability to view that trend on a graph. Or if you can't, you can at least look at the vital signs right next to each other and see that trending process. One of the things that we also can use vital signs trending for is to look at the effects of given medications, and not just pain medications, but cardiac medications. If a patient is given a dose of beta blockers and they have recently not been on beta blockers, you would expect to see a decrease in the pulse and the blood pressure in response to those medications. And the same thing is true for other similar medications. Patients that are on a wide, broad-spectrum antibiotic by IV, we would expect after a certain period of time that their temperature would decrease if the medication was having the desired effect. So these things are all part of what we're looking at when we trend. Now, vital signs also has other purposes. It'll identify an acute medical issue, if something has cropped up suddenly, if you have a patient that has a sudden drop in blood pressure and is post-surgical, you could expect that that patient may indeed have developed an internal bleed of some kind. Same thing is true for other signs of shock. So this is also used to identify the onset of an acute issue and not for necessarily for long-term trending. And that would be the single instance where you would expect a single set of vital signs to give you any meaningful information. Also, vital signs are a way of understanding the magnitude of a problem and also how well the body is dealing with any kind of stressors that are going on. In other words, healing from a post-surgical situation or a patient that's in a trauma situation or any other shock situation where the body is compensating in some way to maintain homeostasis, we would want to see a gradual return to the patient's normal baselines and whatever those normal baselines might be. And if we see a trend in an opposite direction, then clearly they're not physiologically dealing very well with that problem. And of course, they're also a good way to trend over a longer term patients with problems like hypertension, patients with other chronic issues that extended look at respirations over time will give you an idea that they are generally trending upward. We see this a lot, especially for those nurses that are involved in things like parish nursing programs or other community nursing programs where they're regularly taking blood pressures for their patients. You can look at a patient's card in a situation where you're taking their vital signs, taking their blood pressure and pulse every, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in church or something. You can look at that card and you may see that there is a general trend upward. And in that case, that patient can be advised to return to their physician with the information that their blood pressure is trending upward and that they may need to adjust hypertension medications or start hypertension medications. So when vital signs are taken and you are interacting with the patient, what else can be going on? Well, when you're taking vital signs with your patients, especially, and this is good advice for students who haven't yet developed a good routine, is this is a perfect time to meet your patient. It's a perfect time to ask other health-related questions. Perhaps you're concerned about a new medication that's been started. You'll want to follow up on any side effects that you may be looking for. So again, while you're taking your vital signs and you're in the room, it's a good time to interact with your patients and build rapport. Also, when you're in there, you can also do a basic quick head-to-toe assessment of your patient. How's their color? You can check basic things like capillary refill. Are they getting good perfusion to their extremities? Obviously, a good peripheral pulse and blood pressure would indicate this, but you may notice problems with individual extremities with certain types of issues like blood clots where they are showing signs of edema or showing signs of poorer perfusion on one side compared to the other. That would be an indication. And these are things that can happen very quickly and easily during the process of getting vital signs. I also want to urge you to remember that you got that thing around your neck for a reason. It is a stethoscope, and you should be using your stethoscope for some basic auscultation of the patient while the automatic blood pressure machine is running. And that seems to be more and more the standard in most facilities. So the ability to take a manual blood pressure is not necessarily something that you need to use on a regular basis. So you have the stethoscope there. Go ahead and have the patient get their blood pressure while you listen to apical heart rate and compare it to what you're seeing on the monitor. You can do things like check the patient for good breath sounds all the way to the bases. These are all things that can happen during the vital signs period and are assessments that need to occur, but certainly don't have to take up extra time if you get into a good routine. And so that's kind of, you know, you have an excuse to go in and take vital signs anyway. That's something that's very important. The other side of this is how often or how frequently should vital signs be taken? Most facilities will have guidelines that they've already laid in place for patients, but I would urge you to understand that these are minimum guidelines in most cases. So if you have a patient that's post-surgical and you're supposed to be taking their blood pressure every 15 minutes for the first hour, and then every half hour for the next 2 hours, and then every hour or whatever, however your system does it for the 8 to 12 hours following surgery, this is a situation where you need to understand these are minimums. If a patient is set up for a Q15 minute blood pressure checks, but you seem to be getting wonky readings, and you know, there's a medical term for you, wonky readings, but you know what I mean. You're getting something that seems out of the ordinary. You have a couple of alternatives. Use a different machine to verify, take a manual blood pressure to verify, or increase the frequency up to 10 minutes or even 5 minutes to get a better understanding of how this is trending over the short term. And then if it seems like it's leveled off or if it was just an unusual reading, remember the patient may have moved or something like that, you can go ahead and set it back to whatever the normal procedural flow is for your facility. But that starts with you understanding and utilizing taking care of these patients and understanding that vital signs really, you know, fall into the realm of nursing care. We need to be understanding what problems our patients are having and then understand how frequently we need to reassess the patient based on those problems. No matter what our minimum levels may be, we may need to reassess more frequently. This is not something you have to do yourself. Frequently, in most hospitals, the vital signs process is delegated to unlicensed personnel, nursing assistants, or techs on the floor. And that's certainly not a problem, I don't think. But when you have an anomalous reading come up, and those people should be finding you and letting you know that the blood pressures and the vitals and everything else are done for that patient for that time frame, they should be checking in with you to let you just take a glance at them. Because ultimately, it falls in your lap if there needs to be a situation where they need to be medicated per orders, or perhaps they need to have a consult called in based on a change in their condition. Either case, you need to first reassess and make sure that that vital sign was taken properly. So, and when you get an anomalous reading, the first thing you do is go in and assess the patient for yourself if this was a reading taken by someone else. So that's a look at vital signs slash part two, I guess you could call it. We are going to be following up with more of these basic review items, as I find that we have about half the listeners to the show are indeed students, and I want to make sure that there are additional resources here for all of you as well. Plus, it doesn't hurt any of us to think about these things again and revisit them and revisit the way we handle them. And if you do something different, if you decide that something I said here is completely off the wall wacko, well, then let me know. You can get in touch with me here at comments@nursingshow.com. Let me know what your facility is doing. Let me know how nurses are dealing with taking vital signs in the facility in which you work. How is that delegated and how is that process handled? We all need to share this information to figure out exactly how the process might work if we need to institute some form of change. I would also urge you to head over and check out the link in the show notes to allnurses.com. They are our forum partners. If you want to check in there, I have a link to their section on vital signs, and you can check out what some other people are saying about vital signs and leave your own information there as well. Allnurses.com is just a huge resource, and there are thousands of nurses on there every single hour of every single day, so you can almost always get an answer or a comment on something you've posted there pretty darn quickly. That is going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode and remind you to comment back here. Let us know other topics you'd like to see or hear more about and what you think of this episode. You can do that sending in your comments to comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also leave your comments beneath the show notes in the blog. Let me know about how you feel about the episodes and leave ideas there on other topics. Also, don't forget, if you're a member of forums like All Nurses or other places, you can always leave a link there back to your favorite episode here at The Nursing Show. It's a great way to promote The Nursing Show and share it with the nurses and other professionals with whom you interact. If you're looking for other great medical programming, you can't miss out by heading over to the ProMed Network. ProMedNetwork.com is your resource for great programming from qualified medical professionals. Check it out, ProMedNetwork.com. That's enough for me. I'm going to close out, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music. Again, this week from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And this week is an artist that we've played here in the past. Ingrid Michaelson has great music and a very distinctive sound and tone to her voice. So I hope you enjoy it. If you like what you hear, let Ingrid know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Chilly, here, take my sweat.